Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Bretall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 278 for comics originally released on December 5th, 2012. Starting us off in DC is Human Bomb number 1. This is by Justin Gray and Jimmy Palmiotti with art and cover by Jerry Ordway. Now, this is part of kind of the informal series of miniseries that started with The Ray, they did Phantom Lady, now we got the Human Bomb. These are all names, at least, of former Freedom Fighter characters. These are new versions of these characters. There's some connection, you know, tangentially between these titles. We saw, I think it was The Ray in what looks to be the new Uncle Sam at the end of Phantom Lady. We get, you know, Uncle Sam here. So I don't know if they're building towards a Freedom Fighter series or not. And the other thing I find interesting about this group of miniseries is they're in the solicitations. Phantom Lady and Human Bomb are in kind of the generic DC Comics section. So, I mean, I'm considering them part of the New 52. I think Phantom Lady was set just outside Metropolis or something, but they're not, you know, incredibly definitively in the New 52, although we get Shade, that organization in here. So I think they're kind of, you know, skirting the line here, and I think they've got the ability, if for some reason they wanted to say this is on a different Earth, they could. I'm not expecting that. But overall, I've been liking what Gray and Palmiotti have been doing on these various miniseries. And, you know, this was really no exception. I found this to be a very fun issue. Very much a new take on the Human Bomb. And one that I thought kind of reflected kind of the post-9/11 world. It's dealing with terrorism a little bit. And I thought that this version of the character, because it's got a totally new origin, a very different take on both the nature of the powers and what leads up to it, it got around one of the awkwardnesses of the previous or classic Human Bomb of being trapped in that containment suit. And that was more a limitation kind of visually, if you can't really show facial expressions or stuff like that. And power-wise, this character kind of reminds me a little bit more of Damage than the classic Human Bomb, although it's very much based on the classic one. So I thought this was a pretty good issue. I mean, what were your thoughts?
I liked Jerry Ordway's art, and it was an okay story. I just wasn't, it didn't grab me that much. I mean, I can't put my finger on it because there was nothing as I was reading it that I definitively didn't like about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't read it and say, oh, I don't like this or anything. It was a perfectly fine issue. It's just, I wasn't excited about it. You know, I didn't come out of it feeling, wow, that was really great. I want to read more about that. And I can't really put my finger on it.
I didn't have that problem personally, but I can kind of understand that. I thought they did a good job, you know, getting us introduced to the main character and stuff, but it may be that this had more of, was it like more the terrorism kind of angle that maybe just didn't, you know, resonate with you, or?
I don't know, just, you know, nothing in this particularly happened that made me say, I need to read more of this. And maybe it's the tangential tie to the DC universe. I mean, I'm not reading a lot of DC as well. I'm reading about 20 or 22 DC books. So, you know, the Shade angle doesn't do a whole lot for me. And I get the feeling, okay, they're tying into something that I'm not really hooked into that part of the DCU that much.
It's interesting you say that because I thought this version of Shade was a bit different than what we've seen over in like Frankenstein.
Because I'm not reading Frankenstein.
All right, but I mean, it's nothing that couldn't be chalked up to just this being the more high-tech Washington, D.C. branch of that organization.
Sure.
But I find it interesting that you saw that was something that more put you off than pulled you in, because the fact that that group shows up elsewhere really doesn't matter as far as this issue's concerned. It seems like if you were concerned about it's part of the DC universe, that's more of a generic philosophical concern and a very understandable and real
one.
Well,
like I said, yeah. I didn't have anything that I could put my finger on that I don't like about it. And it's more about, I'm not reading anything else with Shade. Do I want to read this with Shade? Maybe it's just like this nagging fear in the back of my mind, oh, if I like this one, what three or four other series are they going to pull me into needing to read because of this?
Well, it almost seems like a crossover phobia kind of a thing.
Could very well be.
Where, you know, there's no reason to think, oh, they're going to cross it over into everything, but there's no reason to think they won't either. Again, I'm wondering if they're building up to a Freedom Fighter series.
And maybe that's the other part, too, because I read Phantom Lady. I wasn't too enthused about it. I liked the Ray. So, you know, I'm kind of like, I liked one, didn't like one. I'm kind of like ambivalent about one. It's like, you know, if they had just the Freedom Fighter series, I'd be okay with that. If they had Freedom Fighters and then three or four other series.
I don't think they're going to go that way. I think we might get another mini series or two on maybe a Black Condor, maybe a Miss America, because I think she gets teased in this issue, or at least a person who could become Miss America is shown here. I'm trying to think which other classic Freedom
Fighters. Uncle Sam.
Well, he's being shown and used here as kind of like a Nick Fury type, so I don't know that they would necessarily give him his own miniseries. They could, but I think round out the members of the team, not the leader of it, and then, you know, spin out or create an ongoing New 52 title of Freedom Fighters. But, I mean, if so, there's something to be said for having established each of these characters in a miniseries, regardless of how low those miniseries may be selling, because almost every miniseries DC has done has landed in kind of that 10 to 20,000 zone of sales, if not immediately, pretty quickly. Almost every miniseries they've done except Huntress ended in that area. So it's not like they're going to get a wide reach of people exposed to all of these characters that way.
I think I'm going to go with one of your favorite statements of it's neither fish nor fowl. It's a DC book, but it's... And while it had the powers, I mean, it's just not a superhero book, right, yet. That doesn't mean that it won't turn into, you know, having costumed heroes. But when I read a DC book and it doesn't have any superheroes in it, it's kind of thinking in the back of my mind, you know, what to make of it. Because if I want to read a book without superheroes, there's lots of other places I turn to for that. Not necessarily DC.
I guess it didn't fall into that category for me. While the Human Bomb is not in costume this issue, I'm kind of expecting him to have a costume by the end of, hopefully the next issue, but certainly by the end of the miniseries. So, to me, this is an origin story for a superhero.
Yeah.
And they've got enough connections to the DC universe for me to say, yeah, it's in there, but they're also trying to keep it a little self-contained. And that's an ongoing challenge for any title set in a shared universe, DC, Marvel, Valiant, or some of the other ones, of if you launch a new title, is it so firmly in there that you scare off everyone who wants a self-contained title, or self-contained enough that you still scare some of those people off because they're afraid, well, it's in there, it may tie in later, and not really pull in the people who want the big tapestry of the overall universe. Of course, I think the people who want to get all of the universe is an incredibly small audience. I would be surprised if there's any major contingent of the readership that's going all in on the Marvel Universe, the DC Universe, or some of these others. I mean, for Valiant, I mean, it's five titles. I can see that. I can see it with the Ultimate line or something. But certainly at DC and Marvel, just with the sheer number of titles, you know, 52 plus whatever miniseries at DC, few people are doing what I'm doing of going all in. At least I would expect that.
Right.
To me, though, I really enjoyed this. Again, the Jerry Ardway art, as you mentioned, I've been a fan of his art for decades. I mean, I loved it back in the All-Star Squadron days. I love it now. He's just a really terrific artist, and you know, I'd like to see him do more work after this miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
So, for me, this was a very solid 4 out of 5.
And for me, it was a 3 out of 5. It was a perfectly fine comic, and I think it's going to resonate with some people. It's not going to resonate with others, mm-hmm. but it's worth trying out. I mean, I didn't dislike it.
Cool.
Next up, we've got Avengers number 1. This one, for me, I think, suffered from the high expectations mismatching what I actually got from the issue. And that's not necessarily a fault of the issue. It's a fault of what I was expecting from the issue. And I think that's coupled with Jerome Opina's art was really just not doing it for me in this mm-hmm. issue. If you go to the page with the staple in particular,
all right.
I mean, that drawing of the Hulk, That, to me, that was terrible. And it's not a qualitative absolute thing, because I mean, I could see somebody looking at it saying, that's one of my favorite pages ever. Just for me personally, just that face, and it didn't do it for me.
To me, two things stood out on this page, because this was one where the art definitely evoked some responses. First, you've got two panels on top, the big panel on the bottom. The big panel on the bottom with the Hulk and stuff like you're talking about is kind of a, and the team charges forth sort of a deal. But it had a very stiff, static sense to it. There was not a sense of action. It was a sense of, I'm doing a pinup shot. You have Thor's very much in shadow in a weird kind of a way. You know, Iron Man's flight path is wildly erratic and kind of bizarre. Hawkeye is just a blur in the background almost. Same with the Black Widow and stuff. So it wasn't one where I'm thinking, wow, just as a splash, it looks really amazing. But then you've got the panel before it, up above it, where you've got Bruce Banner, you know, saying a line, and he's essentially just a silhouette. There are things about that art that just did not really kind of pull me in, did not really wow me. So I can see exactly where you're coming from on some of this. I mean, for me, this issue felt a little stiff, a little lackluster, and part of it is it got off on a little bit of a questionable foot. If we get this previously in the Avengers stuff, we get a full page roster thing with one of Hickman's, you know, graphical, iconic, you know, things, which in of itself is, you know, mildly amusing or whatever, if I can decipher them. And, you know, that's a full page right there. So a couple of pages later, when we get to the two-page credits splash, with no art, but just the Avengers, Avengers World, and the credits or whatever, that felt overly indulgent. I want issues that are packed with story, not issues that have the space to kind of waste on something like this that used to fit on, you know, a caption on one of the story pages. This, to me, and it was intentionally trying to slow down the story, and I get that, it did that, and it didn't work for me. I mean, if I go into a movie theater or watch a DVD or something, they've got a really, you know, great opening scene, which this had an okay opening scene. But if you've got a really action-packed, I mean, imagine the beginning of like a Jackie Chan, you get this huge fight scene, and then you got about 3 minutes of just credit, you know, the title. No real great, you know, let's move around it, let's do some graphics or whatever, just thump, there it is. And you linger on that for a while. It breaks the mood, it breaks the story. It takes me out of the story too much. Now, that's just my reaction to it. I'm sure a lot of other people are going to say, oh, wow, I love when they do these huge splash pages of credits.
That seems to be a Hickman thing lately. You know, it's at these very stark title pages. I mean, he did it a lot over in Red Wing. That was Hickman, right?
Yeah, but we've seen it with some Bendis titles.
Manhattan. No, I know. But it just kind of, it screams Hickman to me when I see something like that. So I wasn't as much bothered by that. But, you know what? It just, I thought it was okay. And I was so looking forward to Hickman doing Avengers because I loved his run on Fantastic Four that, you know, I just had this bar set in my mind that he was going to blow me away. And then I read the issue and I was like, oh, it was okay. You know, the other part that really, one thing about it really put me off.
Okay.
And that was the final splash page with Captain America.
Yeah.
I just felt like that and the page leading up to it where Cap's putting on the new costume was, it's just, okay, we did some stuff and now let's come up with an excuse to put Cap in the movie costume.
Well, going along with what you said, I mean, to me, I found this to be an acceptable issue. It didn't really get me excited about this volume of Avengers, so I think I'm having a similar reaction to what you did. To me, it wasn't so much expectations so much as really what was in here. You know, the first issue of the Busiek Perez run, man, that really got me jazzed about the Avengers. You know, you had a writer that just knew these characters inside and out. They were just in character. There was a ton of them. You had the George Perez art. It was amazing. It was just, wow, this is going to be an amazing run. Here, the art was okay. The story was, you know, villains I'd never seen, don't really care about yet. Stuff like that, it wasn't clicking. Now, part of it is, I think they're trying to do something different here. You know, I get that. I respect that. But the result of that is it's not really clicking with me as much as some of the more classic runs that had a more classic standard take on the Avengers. I mean, those runs, particularly the Kurt Busiek, George Perez run, really, you know, clicked with me. This, I'm not alienated by it. I enjoyed it fine, but it's not one of those where I want to, you know, convince everybody I know, oh, you've got to go read this. You know, it's working okay for me, but not one that I'm going to go out and actively, you know, try to sell people on. Whereas, I mean, even now, I could easily, if somebody says, hey, what's a good Avengers run? Well, you know, you've got this Busiek Perez run. Go try that. And that last page was one that evoked a couple of reactions from me, I guess would be the way to put it. You know, the splash page there was, it felt gratuitous. And again, after that, we get another of the iconic graphics, kind of the same at the beginning, but now with more of the bubbles filled in. These characters are shown. The team is shown, not introduced. Obviously, some of them are easily recognizable. You know, we've got Captain America, Spider-Man, Spider-Woman, Captain Marvel, you know, Falcon, Wolverine. We've got a few that are, you know, frankly, obscure or forgettable characters, and a few that are new, such as the new Captain Universe, Smasher, and Hyperion. But man, a few of these others, I'm like, who are these guys? I think one of them, Sunspot. Obviously, we got Cannonball. And then we've got one of them. I actually had to do a little research on this. I think this guy is just to the right of Cap is Manifold. And apparently he was in the Secret Warriors series for a lot of it. And I read that series and really don't remember him. So, I mean, when I say some of these are forgettable characters, I mean that in so much as, well, I'd pretty much forgotten about him.
That's, if you forgot about him, that's pretty good. Because I was looking at this page, and I'm like, I recognized, obviously, Captain Universe, Spider-Woman, Captain Marvel, Cannonball, because I read the old New Mutants, Wolverine, Falcon, obviously. Hyperion, I know who Hyperion is. I'm like, I didn't know that Hyperion was wandering around in the mainstream Marvel universe, particularly.
This is a new Hyperion. This okay. is not any of the ones we've seen before.
Okay.
It's not the Grunwald one. It's not the one that was in the Exiles. It's not the one that was in Supreme Power. It's a new take.
So, again, you know, the guy right by Cap's left shoulder, I had no idea who that was. And then the two guys who are, to Wolverine's left, our right, I had no idea who those two guys were either.
I'm thinking it's Shang-Chi and Sunspot, but I could be wildly mistaken on that.
That's a terrible look for Shang-Chi if that's him.
Yes. But, I mean, again, these characters are shown, not introduced. Hopefully the story will actually kick into gear next issue. But, I mean, the bottom line is I found the issue enjoyable enough, but not one that really, you know, excited me, galvanized me, and made me think, wow, I've got to convince other people to go read this. Mm-hmm. To me, this was essentially just an average issue. You know, the villain certainly didn't click with me. I'm hoping I'll warm up to the series a lot more. I'm hoping it kicks into high gear next issue. But currently, you know, again, 3 out of 5, average stuff. And I would have liked to have seen better out of Hickman. I think it's unlikely I'm going to consider this to be as classic of an Avengers run as I consider Hickman's work on the Fantastic Four to be for that title.
Yeah, and I felt the same way. I mean, it was a 3 out of 5 for me. I read it, and it's like, well, you know, I pre-ordered a whole bunch of issues of it because I was expecting this to be great, and I'm not going to go out and cancel those. But I'm kind of thinking about, do I want to keep on pre-ordering this book? You know, or do I want to just read the first couple of issues and see if I start liking it a lot better than I liked this issue?
Well, and I guess that's where our views kind of differ in our criteria for what to continue getting differs. To me, I'm going to keep getting it, and I'll be happy to do so. This is just a different kind of a take on the Avengers than were I in charge at Marvel than I would have done. You know, this is a superhero franchise. Let's do great superheroics. Let's do something very much in line with that smash blockbuster movie you just did, you know? This is, again, a different take on it, and, you know, it looks like it's going to be maybe a bit more sci-fi and stuff, and that could be very exciting. But it'll take a couple issues for them to actually get far enough into the story, potentially, to see if it clicks with me on that level. But as a superhero title, it's just, you know, one of the many I get, and I'm happy getting the many.
Yeah, but you get, I mean, for you, it's almost like an automatic buy on a Marvel DC book unless it's particularly bad, you know, because you, especially on a key book like Avengers, because you like reading the whole universe. I mean, I'm reading a handful of these books, so I have to really like a book
exactly
in order for me to keep getting it. And A big part of this was my dislike of the art. Although with their double shipping, you know, I'm sure if I blink, Jerome Pena will move along for the next arc when some other artist will be on there, who maybe I'll like better. But, you know, I don't think any artist can be on a particular title anymore that they're putting out 18 issues a year.
Yeah. Well, and part of why I like to get everything is not just getting the big picture of the universe, but also my theory is every title is going to have peaks and valleys. And to me, this is kind of at that point where it's almost at the, I'll say the zero level, but it's not great. It's not horrible. I'm not saying this is, you know, one of the valleys of the Avengers run, steer clear of it or anything, but it's just there, you know, and there are a couple of titles, or not a couple, there have been times on most titles over the, you know, decades I've been getting some of them where, yeah, they get into that valley and it's, wow, how are they going to dig themselves out of this? And I find a certain enjoyment at figuring out, okay, where do I think they went wrong? How do I think they could salvage this? And also having the full context to where when they get to those high points, such as, say, Hickman's Fantastic Four run, that I'm able to fully enjoy that because I've got that complete history. But that's just how I like to read comics. One other thing I want to mention, because I just noticed it. I'm not sure how many bazillion covers this thing has, but I've got the one with the foreshortened Captain America, you know, about to walk forward and kick the proverbial camera that took this photo, if you will. Do you have that cover?
Yep, that's the one I've got.
So we've got Cap's shield, and we can see kind of the back side of it. And it's got all this kind of, you know, infrastructure and mechanisms for how he grabs it and stuff like that. And it just seems like a really over-designed shield because, you know, classically it's got...
That's not very aerodynamic if he's going to throw it.
Yeah, I mean, classically it has like two straps. He puts his arm through the back one, grabs the front one, and that's how he holds on to it. Not, you know, something that's got his, you know, arm and a vise and a handle or whatever in front of it. It just seemed a little wild. Maybe this is the new and improved version. I don't know. I just saw that and it's like, wow, that's odd. You know, it's not like they have done, you know, numerous volumes of the Marvel Universe, including ones focusing on the shield with the drawings of this is how it is. It's not like they've got that kind of reference material available. If only they had that digitally and gave that to the artists as they were working on titles.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I'd hope for something different. And, you know, maybe if it's tying in with New Avengers, maybe I'll like New Avengers more. We'll see when that one comes out.
Once we get all of the Avengers titles, it's going to be fun to kind of see what direction or directions, plural, they're taking that franchise in. I think they're going to go for a more covert team with the Secret Avengers and a more Illuminati team maybe with the New Avengers. It'll be fun to see where they go.
So I want to go back for another second. So we go to, and maybe this is another reason why I wasn't that enthused about it. I mean, we talked about the art and all this kind of stuff. We talked about the end. Well, I mean, the whole thing that set up the ending is, you know, they go to Mars and there's this big bad villain, Ex Nihilo.
Yeah.
I just didn't get much of a, I mean, I know he did his thing there, but I didn't get a whole lot of feeling of particular threat out of him other than what they had him do, but it was, there was so little context to it. And I mean, is this a new character? I don't know if we're supposed to have seen this guy before or not.
This is a brand new character. And this is why I like having that big picture, so I know these things. And I get I'm in the minority and that most people aren't going to have that kind of a certainty or whatever. And sure, sometimes I'm wrong about certain things, but you know what I mean. Most people are getting, like you, selected titles and stuff, so they're coming in here thinking, is this new? Is this somebody who's got a long history that I just don't know about? And that kind of uncertainty. But these are new characters that make short work of the Avengers, and we get essentially the equivalent of, you know, Cyclops getting sent back and, you know, the formation of the new X-Men, if you will, you know, from Giant Size X-Men number one. I mean, that's the plot point we end on here, essentially. So to say we've seen this sort of thing before, I think is accurate.
I just didn't get a good threat feeling out of this guy. And, you know, I just, for a first issue, I expected more. I expected to come out of it feeling excited, and I didn't. I think that's it, you know.
How do you not see the threat issue here when he's taking these Avengers down just without breaking a sweat. I mean, they take Iron Man out of action. Obviously, Black Widow and Hawkeye, not much of a big deal. You know, Thor and Hulk go down. Cap in one punch. They're done in, you know, the opening moves of the fight. So, I mean, is it an exciting threat level? No, not really. It's almost an overpowered group of villains there.
I almost felt like I was just told that this guy is bad guy, as opposed to being, I mean, I know they're showing it to me, but it's such a summary showing. I have no feeling that it's been built up to at all. And again, the art was just working so poorly for me. I think that all contributed to the general feeling. I think a lot of what my issues with this all boil down to is how much I was not really caring for the art, which is a really big part of, any comic, right? So
I think part of it, though, is going to that threat level. It's not like these villains are a potential threat to the Avengers. The Avengers almost seem like they're barely an annoyance to the villains. And really, when you get that good threat level, it's, you know, who will win? There's a question. Sure, one's maybe a little more powerful or has a definite edge, but the other guy's got a shot. Here, it didn't even look like the Avengers had a chance. They were taken down so quickly. And then the group they assemble at the end, sure, you've got a couple of potential heavy hitters there with Captain Universe and Hyperion, and who knows about Smasher, but Spider-Man and Spider-Woman, man, they're going to go down like Hawkeye and Black Widow did. So it's, I can see where the threat level is kind of skewed again, because, wow, they're so powerful. We're shown that in such short order. It almost seems like the Avengers have no chance, so it's not really a threat. It's a done deal. So I can see that. Shall we move on to our other book?
Sure. In Image, I read I Love Trouble, number one, new series. It's by Kel Simons and Mark A. Robinson. And I liked the issue, but I didn't love the issue. I think mostly what I like about it, and this is kind of funny, what I like about it is the art. And what didn't work for me about it was the art. Let me explain.
Please do.
Just the art itself has a very unique style to it. And I think the style is matching the storytelling really nicely. I mean, I like looking at the art. Mark Robinson's art, it's just he does a really cool job of drawing the figures, of, just drawing this world that we're introduced to. But then what I didn't like about it was the storytelling in the art. And that's the panel to panel continuity, because this girl, that we're introduced to, her ability that she has is she can teleport varying distances. As she first starts out, she can teleport a short distance, and she can, you know, she works up to being able to teleport longer distances. And the visuals of that just were not conveyed that effectively for me in the art at first. And I kind of picked up, you know, what the ability was through the story telling me that that's what it was, as opposed to it being really obvious from the art.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the kind of long and short of it. I mean, the story is kind of cool. I mean, she's running away from something. She gets the teleportation power. She goes back, and there's, you know, the local gangster guy who, you know, now knows she has the power. And it's like, okay, you know, you're going to need to do things, you know, for me with this power. And it's like, okay. And I liked it, but it was kind of it wasn't an unreserved. It wasn't like a 5 out of 5, like, you know, it was kind of like a low 4 out of 5, like, at the end. But it's enough that I'll give it another couple of issues to see how it's going to grab onto me. It certainly has a very distinctive look to it, and I like that. I like the fact that it's got a very distinctive look. Some elements of the storytelling, I really liked how they worked. You know, some I didn't. I liked the title sequence in it. You know, in a couple of the nighttime or dark ones, I think the coloring was a little dark. Didn't work quite that well for me. But overall, it was a good issue, and it's worth picking up and flipping through in the comic shop if your comic shop actually carries this book. Because it does have a very distinctive look and feel to it. And I appreciate that when I see a new book that kind of stands out, that doesn't just look visually kind of interchangeable with every other book on the racks. And I won't say every other book, but you know what I mean, the majority of the other books that are out there. So this one had some stuff going on for it. I would recommend people take a look at it.
Interesting, interesting. Now, I didn't buy this, but I did read the PDF preview that the Image has for review purposes and stuff, and I'm glad I did. Going to the art, I thought this title had an art style that's more of kind of an animated cartoony style, certainly more than I usually go for. A little bit, you know, slightly exaggerated here, but not wildly so. And it's something that I feel I've seen in other books before. I'm thinking, what was the one that had the frat boys or whatever, that had superpowers or something that ran for 5, maybe 6 issues from one of the smaller publishers?
I know which one you're talking about. I don't recall the title.
Yeah. There have been a few others. This had an art style not wildly dissimilar to, I think it was Hero Bear and the Kid.
It has a look similar to a lot of other artists. It's not like completely unique, but it is enough different from most of the art that I'm seeing that it kind of stood out distinctively.
Yeah, well, and what I'm saying is that's the kind of art it is, just so our listeners can understand that.
It's even got kind of an Ali Garza kind of a feel to it.
Yes, that's an excellent description of it. And usually there's not more than maybe 2 or 3 titles on the rack at any given time, at most, that have this kind of a style. So it does stand out that way. But it's not the kind of a style that I usually gravitate towards. You know, there are a few places early on where there was some use of profanity that didn't really improve my assessment of the issue any. Didn't really knock it down either. I just didn't care for it. But then when the lead character, starts, you know, spontaneously and inexplicably teleporting, she doesn't seem to be the least bit surprised or fazed by this. It's just, yeah, she can do it. That's cool. You know? And by that point, and we're getting to her about, you know, 11 pages into the story before the character's even named, clearly. So I'm already kind of not having a name to put around this character, but she almost felt, you know, too cool for school, if you will, she just takes this completely in stride. You know, the airplane blows up, that doesn't really phase her. She teleported to the ground, also getting rid of the excess velocity from falling at that point. Neither of which, you know, really phase her or impress her. It's just, yeah, she could do this. Can't everybody? So it's like, is this a world that has tons of superpowers and stuff? At which point, yeah, maybe it wouldn't be that surprising. Every kid would expect to get them. But the rest of the issue doesn't really give that sense of the world either. Although it doesn't directly, you know, talk about, you know, if there are superheroes and supervillains or not. There were 1 or 2 places I thought the art was particularly unclear. If you go to page 9, she has stumbled into a diner, not really very close to the train wreck, or the plane crash, I mean, not train wreck, plane crash. But she's, you know, walked there or whatever. And the last panel on that page, you've got the waitress or whatever at the register of, the hell the money go, you know? And again, that's the what the hell with the what kind of just skipped, because apparently it's fallen out of fashion. Yet, the register drawer is open, there's all this green stuff down at the bottom, which I took to be the money she was wondering where went. So, to me, the colorist was kind of, you know, not in sync with what the artist was doing, which was unfortunate. And, by and large, this comic just did not work for me. Now, I'm probably not the kind of reader they were targeting. The art style, the story tone, and the basic sensibility were certainly not on the same wavelength as me, and that's not to say there's anything inherently wrong with the art style or the story tone and sensibility, just it didn't align with what I like and what I would have expected. Again, I would have expected somebody who can figure out how to teleport to have some kind of reaction to that, at least initially, like maybe surprise or, wow, that's cool, or gee, that's scary, or something. And I never really started to like or care about this character. And again, referring to it as this character, because, you know, by the time she got named as Felicia, she was already set in my mind as just her, this character, this generic, distant character. And I think there's going to be a crowd of people that love this title, and that's cool. I'm just not in that crowd. And frankly, I'm fine not having spent my money on this issue. It's not the right title for me. Again, I think there is a definite audience for them, and I hope they find it. But personally, if you want a good book about somebody discovering that they can teleport, read Jumper. The movie was good, but I really liked the novel. To me, that they had a lot more time, space, and went in a totally different direction. That I found very enjoyable, very thought-provoking and stuff. This strikes me as something they thought, hey, wouldn't it be cool if... And well, there are a lot of people who say, yeah, yeah. For me, it's a, no, not really. To me, this was a 2 out of 5. It just did not click with me. I, again, am glad I didn't spend my money on it, but I also think there are going to be people who will see this as a 5 out of 5 or something. But it just didn't line up with my tastes, really at all. And I found the story jumped in a few places and the lead character to be both indecipherable and inexplicable, to my mind.
Yeah, I can completely understand that. As I was reading this, I was also thinking, well, John's not going to like this. So it is not up your alley. And that's pretty clear. And like I said, I think it was a good book. I enjoyed it, but I didn't love it.
Mm-hmm.
For some technical reasons, that you talked about and some others. But that said, I'm glad I read it and I'm going to keep on buying it. For now, I'm interested in the world. I like this kind of story, and not the. I didn't look at it primarily on the teleporting side. I like more of the crime lord angle, and you know, what were these guys up to and doing, you know, to get, you know, stealing from him and all that kind of stuff. So I like that, and I'm not put off by the language or any of that kind of thing. So. You know, a lot of the elements that kind of built up to be, well, I didn't like that and I didn't like that for you. Those things weren't detractors for me.
So what rating would you give it?
I give it a low 4.
Interesting. All right. And again, I think part of it is, like you said, this is not the book for me. And I really am not the target reader I think they're going after. You know, again, I'm getting all of the mainstream Marvel and DC universe. I think they're going for people who, frankly, are a bit more dissatisfied with the mainstream Marvel and DC universe and want something different. And I'm really glad there's a title like this out there for people who fall into that category. I think there should be titles out there that I just despise and would never read because there are people out there who have very different tastes than me, and I want them to have something that they just love. So that's cool.
Very good. Okay, just briefly wanted to talk about our other, I don't know if there were more. There's another Marvel #1 that came out, Thunderbolts, that I picked up the #1 blank cover at the local shop.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I wanted to see what it was like. I hadn't pre-ordered it, and I can always do with a sketch cover to get a sketch on at a con or something like that. And I actually liked this one more than I liked Avengers #1. And I think a lot of it had to do with I liked Steve Dillon's art a lot more than I liked Opina's art in it.
I can understand that. The part that got me with this is, again, Dillon's a great artist, so, I mean, the art definitely clicked. But the entire issue was the recruitment of these characters and kind of pulling them together, and the team never even gathers at the end. I mean, we never get more than 2 of the people together at any one time, which is fine, because I'm curious how they brought this team together, and I thought it was a decent lead-in issue. I hesitate to say a good first issue. To me, this is a .1.
I agree with you on that. I didn't unreservedly love this or anything, but I was intrigued by it. I did feel like the, you know, General Ross, like, kind of nonchalantly popping into each scene and, you know, hey, you know, let me recruit you kind of a thing. That was a little
inconsistent with how he's been hiding his identity in every other title we've seen him in. Is that the words you're looking for?
Well, I haven't read every other title we've seen him in. It just seemed
Have you read
odd.
Any other title we've seen him in?
I've read some of the Red Hulk stuff. I've seen the Red Hulk in some titles, and I'm discounting back when he was just the blustering Air Force general with the
right.
giant cigar chomped in his lips, you know, kind of thing. But I mean, it did seem kind of odd, you know, to me. The one thing that was particularly odd was there was this flashback sequence that just popped in out of the blue there, when he was talking to the Punisher, I think the first time. And it flashes back to this woman with the pink hair. I didn't know exactly who that was. I think she's going to end up on the team, but he didn't explicitly recruit her. She comes back in that one panel, maybe
yeah,
the
between
fourth,
Venom
fifth
and Deadpool.
Page from the end. Yeah, it's Venom, girl with pink hair, Deadpool, Elektra. You know, and when I look at the cover, I see Red Hulk, Elektra, Venom, Punisher, and Deadpool, and girl with pink hair is not on the cover of the issue, and girl with pink hair is not one of the main people that General Ross talks to, but then she's in that team montage issue, and she's in that flashback, so I was kind of like, okay, well, I guess she's going to be on the team, but, you know, I was a little confused by that.
Did you recognize that character? Have we seen her in the past? If so,
I didn't personally recognize her.
If we've seen her before, I'm thinking it would have been before Hulk 300 in that kind of era. But because I don't recall her from after that.
She must have been in some place. I just don't have a complete recall. I mean, because I was reading Hulk, you know, back around the time frame that this probably would have happened. I just don't have a complete memory of the character.
Well, it's been ages. Now, what I found particularly, trying to think of what would be the right way to phrase this, interesting, off-putting, frustrating, a sign of horrible editorial direction at Marvel, I think that's what I'll go with. This was
That's a given with Marvel.
I know, but I feel like pointing out specifics and not just, you know, categorically stating some of this. Let's see. Jordan D. White is the editor. Nick Lowe is the senior editor. Not to be confused with Ellie Pyle, the assistant editor, or Stephen Wacker, the editor of Punisher Warzone, that also came out this week. Although both roll into Axel Alonso, the editor-in-chief. The Punisher in this issue has very little resemblance, be it physically or, you know, in terms of attitude or anything, than the Punisher currently going around the world in Punisher Warzone that's being hunted down by various Avengers. And last I looked, the Red Hulk was an Avenger. So you would think he would be kind of aware of what's going on, or you would think the people editing these books would at least have a consistent, you know, what's the Punisher's status quo? And it'd be one thing if this was like the last issue of Punisher Warzone or something like that, and it's gonna, okay, he shaves and gets recruited by Thunderbolt Ross and stuff. Okay, cool. But we're only two issues into a five-issue miniseries with Punisher Warzone. So he's got another couple issues, a couple of months, because this is coming out monthly, to go before he could possibly roll into the events of Thunderbolts number one. So having characters in, you know, those wildly different story positions, if you will, simultaneously, to me, undercuts the story credibility of both stories. And that's something that, on a conscious level, is it going to bother most readers? Not at all. On a subconscious level, is it really going to kind of chip away at the sales juice or the credibility or whatever of these things? Certainly.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, I didn't, because I'm not reading that Punisher Warzone series, so that particular thing didn't jump out at me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the other Punisher stuff I'm reading is stuff that's like kind of explicitly not in continuity, you know, like the Max stuff. So I don't, when I see Punisher in the Marvel Universe, I don't expect him to be acting or behaving or
like the
directly
Punisher in the Marvel
looking
Universe
like the,
that we're
like
seeing.
Right, exactly.
I mean, I'm willing to take the Max stuff and say, okay, that's kind of like Vertigo. That's kind of off on the side. It's a different take on these characters. I don't mind that. But these are two books both set squarely in the Marvel Universe.
Oh, I completely understand. And, you know, that's in general, I think I've said before, I don't particularly care for the Punisher in the Marvel Universe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being a member of this team, okay, I mean, I probably can take it or leave it, as the case may be. But just as a general rule, I'm not that enthusiastically sold on the Punisher as someone who should be running around with superheroes. Now,
and that's fair, but let's take a different example then and get it away from that character, which I think is a little bit of a different case because, like you said, he's well established in the Max area.
Mm-hmm.
What about the Hulk? And this is something, frankly, I'm surprised I didn't think about earlier, so we could have discussed it when we reviewed Avengers number one earlier in the show. But we had that one point where I was saying you've got Banner and then boom, we've got the panel with the Hulk. that kind of goes towards a, you know, the Banner can turn into the Hulk at will. They've kind of teamed up like we saw at the end of the Incredible Hulk series that just ended. But kind of flies in the face of what we've read recently in Indestructible Hulk number one, where they're still kind of at odds. Sometimes he kind of hulks out and has to be pointed in the right direction by S.H.I.E.L.D. versus the Hulk just kind of playing by the same game plan.
I will give you that. That was a different thing.
And those sorts of things, you do it often enough, and it's easy to have happen when you've got so many titles, and particularly so many titles shipping so quickly, that it slowly, you know, unravels the coherence of the universe. And again, is continuity a big deal? No, to some people, yes, to others. To me, I'm willing to give it a little fudge factor and stuff, but when it comes down to, I can't really accurately guess at what the characters are going to do because they're so inconsistently handled that they may as well be two different characters. That really chips away at the credibility of the stories. You know, these are now not people, they're characters.
Yeah, I can appreciate that. And that's a very valid point.
And I'm sure I could probably, if I dug a little, find some other examples. But man, I've still got about almost 24 comics left from this week to read. It's been a busy week for me.
Yeah, I've got a good 6-7 inch high stack of unread comics sitting here from the last 2 or 3 weeks. I've not been keeping up with my 25 books a week, you know, that I've been having flow in over the last few weeks.
So what I have left, I think, is the rough equivalent, maybe 2 or 3 less than you get per week, I guess, on average. I've still got my shipment that just came in yesterday to go pick up at the UPS store. And then I need to, that'll be the one we cover next week. And I need to get all that read before the following one comes, because we're getting towards the end of the year. And originally, the publishers were all thinking they were going to release stuff on the 26th. But then somebody realized, you know, we've got this daily shipping, so people would get the stuff the day before on the 25th of December. And oddly enough, I think most stores are closed on Christmas.
Yeah.
And they're doing that now as a ship or a skip week, so they're shipping those things on the 19th. A few of them will be held to the 26th. There's, you know, a handful of books to go get, and then kind of back in business as usual the following week. But what that means is the shipment on the 19th is going to be gargantuan. It's going to be huge. So fortunately, I've taken some time off from work, and we'll have a little extra reading time because I'll need it. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That does it for everything I wanted to explicitly talk about.
So were there things you wanted to explicitly not talk about or inexplicably talk about? Or
no.
Okay. Cool.
Join us next week when we discuss Batgirl number 15 from DC, Avengers Arena number 1 from Marvel, and The Hollows number 1 from IDW.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.